Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
It's Brian Hayes in here with Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. Overdrive delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Derek Englund will join us for the Vegas Golden Knights in about a half an hour. He was at the UFC over the weekend in Vegas and get his take on what that experience was like. And now that we're a few weeks removed from them losing the cup, you know, has that kind of sunk in yet? What are they going to do next year with expectations? Because all of a sudden... Vegas, I don't think anyone's going to expect them to replicate that run, but you don't want to see them to drop off to like a 65-point disaster, which is kind of what we expected in their inaugural season.
Well, and there were people making that argument during this incredible run that this could be, as much as it's a positive, it could also turn out to be a negative in the long run. Because if you spoil the fan base in year one with this incredible success all the way to the Cup Final, then you hit the reality of, we're just another team in this league. We're not that good. We're not really going anywhere. We're not getting any better. We don't really have a lot of young guys. It's a long road back to the top. I mean, how many years could they be waiting to replicate that first year?
Well, that's the truth. I mean, the Leafs haven't had a year like that in over 50 years.
That's what I mean.
Like, they have not, like, we always say, like, oh, the Leafs haven't won a cup. They haven't been to a cup final since 1967.
Precisely.
So, and it's already happened. We had Daniel Negreanu on last week, who is from Toronto and was a big Leaf fan, but now is really invested in Vegas and the Golden Knights. And he's like, oh, there's no reason why we can't be really, really good for a long time, and who wouldn't want to be here? And Bob, and I'm like, you better watch yourself, man, because a reality check is going to happen at some point. Even if they're competitive next year, at some point, the next 5 or 10 years, they're going to have a down year, if not multiple down years. And then we'll really see what they're made of.
Everything
really see
went
what Vegas
their way.
Is all about.
Everything went their way, from the Vegas flu and all the NHL GMs allowing their teams to have their fun on the road on their first trip to Vegas. You think NHL GMs are going to say, let's sacrifice every trip to Vegas with a blowout night on the road?
No way.
This is not going to happen.
No, it's not.
I mean, you may get some Vegas flu effects, you know, from here to eternity, because there will be guys who enjoy the nightlife in Vegas the night before games, but it's not going to be sanctioned the way it was this year, by my understanding, where there are a lot of teams just said, guys, it's our first time here, go blow it out.
Go do your thing. And that doesn't even mean that guys were at the club until 4 a.m. What I always heard was, it's just a different routine.
Right.
So if you play in Buffalo the night before, you go to dinner, you're back at the hotel at 10, you watch a movie, and you fall asleep.
Right.
In Vegas, you go to a show, then maybe you go to a later dinner, then maybe the tables for an hour, and then you're back in bed at like 12:30, but it's different.
Yes.
You know, it seems simple, but these guys are creatures of habit. And just that simplistic difference did enough to completely alter the way that they were approaching the game the next day.
And clearly. I mean, so, you looked at the home winning percentage, it just didn't make
sense.
Off
the charts.
It was off the charts.
Yeah, so we'll catch up with him later in the hour. Bobby Orr, I think it's Eric Staal's tournament. Something's going on up in...
Yeah, I think it's the annual Staal tournament
up in Thunder Bay. And Bobby Orr, his agency now represents Austin Matthews. Matthews left CAA and is now with the Bobby Orr Group. And Gino Retta's up there, and Gino caught up with Bobby Orr. And there's a couple of clips we want to play here, because there's so many different layers to the Tavares signing and the conversation, and 90% of it is positive.
Oh, yeah.
5% of it is not negative, but there can be ramifications, how it's going to affect the cap, how they're going to build around him. And then the other 5% is like scare tactics, where Leaf fans are just freaking themselves out that somehow this is going to affect how the way other players feel. And it seems like Matthews has been the prime target for that.
Sure.
For that concern, right?
Of course.
This idea that Tavares is going to steal his limelight, he's not going to like it, and he's going to want to go home. Or the fact that Tavares came to Toronto, all of a sudden Matthews is going to want to do that and play for the Coyotes in the future.
Mm.
You know, which is simply just people losing control of their emotions and their mentality and freaking themselves out.
Yeah.
Because there's just no substance to it. There's no rhyme or reason for it.
But you understand it because it's prosperity paranoia. Because you're just not used to the prosperity. You're
exactly.
not used to good things happening to your club. And now they're happening en masse. And you're freaking out because it's like, this is not what happens to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It never works this way.
No.
And they're loaded with talent. They're loaded with talent. And Bobby Orr, again, was talking to Gino earlier today. And Gino brought up the negotiation. Because Matthews can't, as of July 1st, he could have signed a long-term deal.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
That hasn't happened yet. He's got 1 year left on his entry-level deal. Here's what Bobby Orr told Gino Retta about Matthews in the contract negotiation.
I don't think the money, the kid's going to be a heck of a player. It's like John Tavares, free agency. It was nothing but money. Yeah. It's where he wanted to play. He wants to play in Toronto. And if it doesn't happen this year before the season starts, he still has a year left to fulfill his contract, and we'll see what happens after that. But yeah, hopefully he'll get it done. He likes Toronto, wants to stay in Toronto, and I'm sure they'll get it done.
So hearing that clip, there's a couple things that I take out of it. Obviously, it is about money. Clearly, it's always about money.
It always is.
Why would you have an agent if it's not about money? But I think hearing the clip, as opposed to reading the clip, what Bobby Orr is saying is, we all know he's getting the money. It's like Tavares, because Dubas told us last week that they didn't even talk numbers in the meeting. Now, I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but the point he was making to us was he wanted to make sure that Tavares was committed to wanting to be here, and the numbers would take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. They knew they were going to have to pay him around $11 million a year, and it was going to be a 7-year deal, and no trade clause, no movement clause, loaded with bonuses, buyout proof. That's what comes with leverage. Matthews doesn't have the same leverage because he's an RFA, not a UFA.
Right.
You know, Tavares could have gone anywhere. He decided to come here. You got to pay a little bit more or give a little bit more to do that. But I think what Bobby Orr is saying here is, we all know Matthews, what he is as a player and what they're going to pay him. What's important to hear there if you're a Leaf fan, don't concentrate on that. Concentrate on what he said. He wants to be in Toronto. Like, it's going to get done. Hopefully it gets done this summer. I think it's in the best interest of both parties to do it this summer. Don't let it hang over them for a year, because that can break both ways. But he wants to be here. He wants to be in Toronto.
Why wouldn't he?
Why would you not want to be in Toronto if you're Austin Matthews?
I mean, there's no indication that he does not want to be here. And the idea that he would not want to be here because a new number one center showed up in town, I think it's a little premature. Like, I mean, look, there's legitimate beefs. If you're Austin Matthews, I can tell you with 100% certainty that Austin Matthews, you know, wasn't happy with the amount of power play time he got. He's received these past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But who is on that team? Because Babcock's really done it in a way most coaches don't do it. And then he's had these two units that have almost got equal time. And it just so happened that the unit that Matthews wasn't on was the more successful unit.
And the one that went out first, if everything was equal.
Because it was the most successful unit.
Right, but you could argue maybe because they get that opportunity.
You could argue that. And hey, I've heard that argument made by people.
Yes.
On that represent the people in the second unit. It was funny enough how
Absolutely.
That works. You know, so look, so there's going to be a bit of that. And there's another backstory here, too, of the agent wars that have gone on this year. And I think a lot of what you're hearing about, is Matthews happy? You know, it's about the agent wars. Because don't forget, the reason he's being represented by Bobby Orr now is because Austin Matthews made the decision to leave Pat Brisson
mm-hmm.
and his agency.
Who represents
Tavares. Johnny Tavares.
Yes.
So there's an interesting backstory of the agent war here, where Matthews leaves Pat Brisson, goes to Bobby Orr with his with Brisson's ex-assistant or ex-cohort, Judd Moldaver. And now, at a moment when, you know, Austin Matthews was preparing to take over Toronto and get his payday, maybe get the captaincy, who rolls up in town but Pat Brisson with another star client and says, I got a guy named Johnny T. He's a hometown boy. He's going to be getting some of those endorsements you were going to be getting, Austin. And guess what? Guess what the commission on endorsements is? It's a lot more than it is on salary.
Absolutely.
It's like 20% on endorsements. It's 4 to 5% on contracts. So that's the backstory with the agent stuff.
Well, and the truth is, too, about endorsements, that's a lifelong game.
Right.
The player contract comes to an end at some point. Some point, you got to hang up the skates. But if you're a Maple Leaf legend, which Matthews already is through 2 years.
Yeah.
It says something about who he is and what he represents and how we were starving for this for so long. Tavares is already a Maple Leaf legend. He hasn't even played a game yet.
Right.
These guys are going to make so much money for the rest of their lives, but it is a bit of a fight. You know, who's going to get that autograph session? Who is going to show up at that golf tournament? Who's going to be the poster boy for a major Canadian company for the rest of their life? Because there is only so much money to go around.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I don't dispute that. I think in terms of the ice time conversation, that only complicates things for the head coach. Like, the Tavares signing should help the head coach, but it also puts pressure on the head coach. Now the expectations are through the roof, and everybody's well aware that Matthews is not putting up with being the 37th center in the league in terms of time on ice.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. He wants to be on the first power play. I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to kill penalties. I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted different line mates. Like,
wow.
All of these different things have come up.
And you hit on one there. Like, I found it very interesting on the day Johnny Tavares was signed here. You know, Mike Babcock was with reporters, and what did he do that he never does?
He took Zach Hyman off that line.
He announced his lines.
I agree with you. I think that meant a lot. I thought it went over the heads of a lot of people in Toronto, and it didn't become big news. But for him to say, I envision Marleau with Matthews and Nylander, it speaks volumes to me that Hyman was not on that
line. It was
line.
Almost as though he'd been at a kitchen table in Arizona, sitting around with the Matthews family, and got a request. It was almost as though, I'm not saying that's what happened, but you got the sense.
You could start connecting dots, because I absolutely believe this. Again, I don't know this, but I just believe it, connecting dots. You look at what happens in the playoffs, and you look at what happened at different times over the past couple of years. When Matthews had a down period, when his play dipped a little bit, he didn't get Marner on his line. He got Brown and Hyman on his line. Mm-hmm. Now, I love Connor Brown, and I love Zach Hyman. I love what they represent. I think they're integral parts of the team. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Matthews looked back on that seven-game series when he was struggling, and for the first time in his career in Toronto, he was getting heat. People were calling him out, like, you got to be better than this. Bergeron's eating you up.
Yeah.
You know, Marchand and Pasternak are eating you up. You got to be better. And he probably looked at his coach and said, give me Mitch. Like, Mitch is dancing here. And what did he get? He got Brown and Hyman.
Without a doubt.
And that would not surprise me if that ate him up a little bit.
No, it would shock you if he didn't eat him up. Mm-hmm. And it would, look, it's only human nature to look at the line mates you've got and say, I could do better. I mean, you've been on hockey teams.
Yes.
Everybody does it, whether you're playing in a beer league or a house league or the world's best league. It's just what people do.
You have to. It's a team sport. You've got to rely on those people.
You've got to rely on the guys you play with. And you're only as good as the guys you play with in a lot of ways. And I know people want this guy to be good in all conditions and under all circumstances. But, hey, I think it was huge that he said, you're right, Matthews, Marleau, Nylander, not Matthews, Nylander, Hyman. That, to me, I was surprised Babcock did that. He doesn't do that. He's the guy who shows up to practice and doesn't even tell the guys on the lines which lines they're on until they get the jersey in their locker.
Right? Yeah.
He's not a guy to telegraph this stuff. So it said something to me that he telegraphed that particular combination. And I think that was a message not to us. It was a message to Austin Matthews.
Absolutely. That was right to Scottsdale, Arizona. Yeah. That was right to Twitter and to his Twitter account. That's precisely what it was. So that's what Tavares brings. It complicates the job of Babcock, because you're not playing Tavares $11 million a year to play 16 minutes a night. And Matthews has got to play more. He wants to play more. He should play more. And Kadri is back-to-back 30-goal scorer. So how are you going to get those minutes in? That's where it gets complicated, but that's why you get paid $6 million a year.
But to me, it's more complicated because, you're right, you got more pieces now. But in some ways, it's almost easier because now you don't have to worry as much about the big matchup. You don't have to worry. Like, let the opposing coach take his pick.
Who that's never been his MO, though. That's never been. That, this is where it'll be interesting with Babcock. This is a guy who starts Leo Komarov on 3-on-3 in overtime.
Yes.
At home.
But who's taking his option? Kyle Dubas is going to take those options away from him. He's doing that this offseason with no Roman Polak in town and no Leo Komarov and no Mike Babcock crutches left. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nobody for Mike Babcock to throw out there that doesn't make any sense anymore, because Kyle Dubas is taking those guys off the roster.
Right.
Right? So, and I also, but my point is not so much the coaching matchup, Hayes. It's more about, you know, it's going to be easier to get these guys minutes because the minutes aren't going to be as tough. Like, if he was worried in the past about playing Matthews too much, and he was, you know, he was clearly worried about not, you know, riding this young guy into the ground and probably overcompensated to a large degree. But you heard him mocking his buddy McClelland out there in Edmonton about how much he overplayed Connor McDavid.
Well,
and he kind of overcompensated and probably underplayed Matthews for that very reason, because he didn't want to wear him out. But now I think, when you've got two essentially number one lines and two guys who could pass as a number one center in Tavares and Matthews, I actually think no matter what the matchup is, one of them's getting easier minutes.
Yes.
And that's going to help.
They absolutely will. And listen, he, Mike Babcock, like every coach in the world, is stubborn and believes in his own beliefs. And listen, he took blowback on the Matthews minutes conversation, and we interviewed him right after the season, and I ran that down. I said, Mike, we've been talking a lot about this. He is ranking somewhere in the mid-30s in terms of average ice time. And I said, you know, compared to McDavid and compared to Barkov, and he bit right back and said, well, did those guys make the playoffs? And I'm like, no, they didn't make the playoffs.
He's got a point there. I'm actually behind Babcock on the way he's massaged the minutes in a lot of ways. And let's not forget, the other counterpoint to that is, hey, did Austin Matthews manage to play 82 last year? No, he played 62.
Exactly.
Durability has been an issue for this kid.
Yep. You know? No, for sure.
So, you know, in some ways, if you're Austin Matthews' agent, as much as there was some moaning and groaning about why isn't he on the first power play, why isn't he playing more, I think they were lacking a bit of perspective. Like, this could be, Mike Babcock could be doing your client a big favor here by not running him into the ground at a young age in the way that Edmonton's running Connor McDavid into the ground at a young age.
Well, I mean, that would be the counter for Babcock. Now, I do think it's strategic at the same time, too. He's a line matcher, and on the road, he wants to set up different things, and I think he kind of overcompensates for certain guys. Like, you know, Leo Komarov, there were games where he was playing over 20 minutes.
21 minutes.
Which is just completely ridiculous. But that's brings into question, again, the Dubas scenario, where he's taking those guys out of the system. So Babcock's going to have to adjust here. Well, and this emphasis on the defense, it's on him, too, to clean that up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this, they have what they have. Drew Doughty's not walking through that door. It is on Mike Babcock, who's getting paid more than any coach in the history of the league, to make sure that they improve defensively.
Well, you want to talk about pressure. You know, we talk about who's going to be under pressure this year. You know, Mike Babcock, when they roll up to the playoffs next year, and let's assume they're making it, he will have lost 7 of his last 8 playoff series behind an NHL bench. Mm-hmm. So forget the gold medals and the World Cup of hockey. This is a guy on a massive losing streak as an NHL coach. In a league where underdogs win all the time, he's had underdogs, and they can't win. You know, like give him the credit that the Detroit teams in his latter years in Detroit were always underdogs in those playoff series, but they just haven't pulled off any upsets at all. The Leafs have been underdogs at times, but, you know, they were underdogs against Washington when Washington won the President's Trophy 2 years ago, and they came close, but they didn't win. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who hasn't really pulled one out of his hat in quite some time as a coach. If he's the greatest genius in the game, and he's certainly paid like it, you know, where are the wins?
Well, it's put up or shut up this year. I mean, you've got this kind of talent. I don't care. And people are already bracing themselves for, well, you're going to play a really good team. That's fine, man. You're a really good team.
That's the idea.
At some point, you got to win. Gino Redick, again, caught up with Bobby Orr earlier today. And he also posed the question to Bobby Orr, who's the agent for Austin Matthews, or kind of the parent agent.
Sure.
It's his agency, so to speak. Is there any controversy surrounding the captaincy in Toronto now that Tavares is aboard, and there's a debate whether or not he's going to end up getting the captaincy? Here's what Bobby Orr said about that.
This ball about being upset about this and being upset about that and the captaincy, that's so wrong. Shouldn't be happening. They're a good team. They're going to be a very good team, and John puts them closer to their goal, and that's what Austin is concerned about.
Very diplomatic answer. The appropriate answer. You don't want to cut. What's he going to do? Come out and be like, no, we're demanding the captaincy. We're not signing long term. I don't know Matthews personally, so I don't know what that means to him. I can only imagine what it means to Tavares, being the captain of his Maple Leafs. He grew up here. He, Nat Sundin fan. He's probably too young for the Gilmore era and the Clark era, but he understands the importance of them and what their legacies mean to the city of Toronto. But I'm sure it would mean something to Matthews. I mean, I'm sure he would wear it as a badge of honor. But I'd like to believe that if it isn't his captaincy, if it goes to Tavares or maybe Morgan Riley, his name's been thrown out there a little bit, which may actually ease all of the stress of this, if you gave it to Morgan Riley, might be actually the way to go here. So then you don't create some sort of controversy, even if it is completely contrived from the media and the fan base.
I love the theory. And I mean, to be honest with you, as a guy who's covered the team for a long time now, and certainly, you know, pretty much most days since Morgan Riley's been around, Morgan Riley has carried himself like the captain of the Leafs from the moment he got here. Like, he's been a willing spokesperson who's taken the good with the bad, and always shown up to talk to the media and be a great public face of the franchise, always played hard. Never, no one's ever questioned. They may question, is he a number one? Is he even a number two? But they've never questioned, does he give it? You know, is he a good teammate? I mean, he, to me, is the model guy. Like, if I had to pick one today, I wouldn't give it to Johnny Tavares because I think that's a bad message in some ways, sending, giving it to a guy who's never played a game for your team. You know, how did it go when they gave it to Dion Phaneuf after he played 26 games for the team? Not that well.
Right.
You got to see how things play out.
Well, we always talk about pressure and protecting guys. Yeah. You still have to protect Tavares, even though he's a veteran. This guy is taking on a journey here that we've been waiting for forever. You know, this is like a story, like a Shakespearean story.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you know, in many suns and many moons from today, a Toronto superstar will come back and play for his hometown team and lead them to glory. Like, that's what's coming with this. On top of it, he's the highest paid player on the team by a mile until Matthews does eventually sign. So I think the protection of John Tavares, that cannot be overlooked. So I'm with you. I wouldn't just hand it to Tavares. Now, I'm not saying they won't do that. They very well might, but I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
Matthews is the guy who always, it seemed like the obvious one to me, but maybe to save yourself from all this, it would be a guy like Morgan Riley. And I'm not around them every day, like you are and like other beat reporters who are down there constantly, but everything I've heard is like the room, it goes through Morgan Riley.
Yeah.
You know, like he's connected to all of the players, and he's absolutely beloved in that room.
He's beloved in the room. He is a great teammate, leader. He's got the right temperament. To me, it's a lot about temperament when you're the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, because you got to put things in perspective, right? Because every day seems like, you know, if you're losing, it's doomsday. If you're winning, you're the greatest thing in the world, and you're en route to the Stanley Cup, and let's plan the parade. So you need somebody that understands that and can deal with that and roll with that. And Morgan Riley, to me, has been that guy. And you're right. If it's this rivalry between Matthews and Tavares, and if not them personally, because they barely know each other, but certainly their camps, because you had Matthews leaving one agent and going to another, and that agent that he left happens to represent Johnny Tavares. If all that stuff is sort of ugly
and potentially toxic
and could filter down to the player if the players allow it to, and I don't think they will. I don't think there's any evidence that they have, but it's there. Yeah, Morgan Riley's your easy out, and he's the guy. And who would question?
And he deserves it. It's not like you're handing this to someone who's not going to be a core piece.
No,
he's your number one defenseman, drafted and developed here, loves it here, signed long term here. I've never heard, you know, him. I'm sure he's had a misstep here or there. I'm sure he has, and I'd have to go back and look over the archives. But for the most part, he seems to be really, really comfortable with the media and comfortable with dealing with what you just laid out.
Here's the caveat. When Mike Babcock has talked the occasional time, if you look back in the archives, about what he thinks a captain should be and who he thinks a captain should be. And one of the things he said a couple of times, and I don't have it in front of me, but I do remember to paraphrase, it was essentially, it's got to be a really great player. Like, it's got to be a great player that is the captain, because you can't just have a run-of-the-mill guy. You can't just have any other guy. And I don't know if Morgan Riley's any other guy, because he's probably your best defenseman on most nights. But he's not a star player in the league, is he? I mean, not yet anyways. And Babcock has, in some ways, made the case that if you're not a star, it's too hard.
But what's interesting about that is every team takes a different approach to anointing a captain.
Yeah.
It could be the head coach that makes a call. It could be the front office that makes a call. It could be the players that vote, right? Like, we've seen that happen in Montreal. The players voted, and Pacioretty was voted in as the captain. And it caused a bit of a stir. Why didn't Subban get it? A lot of people thought he should have gotten it, but it said something about maybe how the room felt about PK, because they didn't vote for him.
Yes.
They voted for Max Pacioretty. And that's another part of this conversation that we haven't had any clarity on. And I've asked them that before, and they never gave me an answer. They always dance around it. But I asked, I think it was Babcock, like, how do you see this playing out if you've decided you think you've got a captain in the room? Will the players vote? Will you make the decision? Will Shanahan make the decision? And I'm sure they've got an idea, but that would be intriguing as well. You know, if you went to the players, who would they vote for?
Yeah.
And if you feel like it's going to cause a bit of a stir with a superstar, and at this point you have two of them that really stand out, Tavares and Matthews. Marner's right on the brink of superstardom. Nylander a little bit further down. I think Morgan Riley is not a superstar, to your point, but he's a really, really good player.
Sure. Now,
he'll go to the All-Star game a couple of times in his career, and he'll put up really good numbers. He'll play 1,000 games if he stays healthy. He's a really, really good player. But that's probably where they have to start. Who's making this decision?
Well, and my feeling on that is they haven't said it outright. There's no doubt about it. But I would be highly surprised if it turned into a player vote. I think when you look at the way Brendan Shanahan's run things and respected history and understood the magnitude of things like the symbol that is the C on the chest of a guy who plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And as much as I've heard a lot of people downplay it and say it doesn't mean anything in today's game, well, I'll tell you what, it may not mean that much to the players because they know who leads the team, but it's a property, right? Like, it's a prestige symbol.
Especially when you're legitimately a cup-contending
yes.
team. You're right. Whoever the captain is in Carolina, doesn't matter
Nobody
that much.
Cares.
They're not holding up the cup anytime soon.
Right.
This team could have someone skate out to center ice and hold the cup for the first time in over 50 years. And that's the picture that everyone's going to be attracted to.
Exactly.
That's the guy who is going to get the first interview. And that's the guy who is going to show up on during the parade and be holding the cup if yeah. he wants to.
In other words, my thing would be, they're not giving Jake Gardner a vote on that.
No, you're probably right.
You know what I mean?
Like, you're probably like, right.
Not to dump on Jake, but they're not giving player X. They're not giving
right.
every guy
Barry
in that Kapanen room.
Kapanen isn't making that
They're
call.
Not giving every guy in that room an equal say about who they think should be the captain because it's too important a decision for this franchise
mm-hmm.
and for this city. And it's such a massive mantle to be handed. And that's why. So I think it'll be a combination of Shanahan, Dubas, Babcock getting in a room and saying, is it time?
Yeah.
Who is it? How are we doing it? When are we doing it?
I think that makes the
I
most
think that's
sense.
How it's going to go
I
down.
Think that makes the most sense. And this is where the magnitude of the team and what it represents and the amount of coverage that comes with it, there are so many different layers to every single story. And whoever they anoint as the captain, that will obviously be a focal point. Okay, why did you choose this guy? What does this mean? What has he done to deserve this? But it's inevitable that something else will also come up. In other words, how does this guy feel about not being the captain?
Oh, yeah.
How does that guy feel about this guy being the captain? I mean, that's the way it works. And, you know, that quote from Bobby Orr, that sounds good. You know, and I believe all these guys are committed to winning and they want to be here. Everything I've heard about Matthews is he loves being a Maple Leaf. He loves Toronto. Why would you not be ecstatic about Tavares being here? I've never bought that he's going to be bitter about that. Crosby loves that Malkin's his wingman and has been since day one.
It makes things easier.
Absolutely. And if it's all about winning, that's what you need.
Yes.
You need these guys to help you. You need to have that type of help or you're just not going to be in a position to succeed.
Let's be honest. These guys aren't stupid. When you've got more good players on more lines, it opens things up for everybody because mm-hmm. the other team has only got limited resources. They've generally only got one great checking line. Someone's got to deploy it on somebody, and if it's not on you, it's your night to shine.
Yep, and everyone's going to get their ice time.
Imagine Nazem Kadri. Like, imagine what he's thinking right now. Like, he's thinking, well, if they use the checking line on Tavares, and they use their second-best checking line on Matthews, I'm going to be playing against third-line scrubs.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a 30-goal scorer these past 2 years. I'm going to make some freaking hay.
Absolutely.
Against that matchup.
No, he's an integral part of this team as well. This idea that because you have Matthews and Tavares, you dump Kadri overboard is
not
ludicrous.
Even close.
He's even more important now.
Well, it's a value contract. It's
$4.5 million per year for another, like, 4 years.
Exactly.
It's one of the best contracts
deal.
In the league. Derek Englund from the Vegas Golden Knights will join us next. All right, Jordan Schultz will join us, Yahoo Sports NBA Insider, just after 6 p.m. We'll get into these Kawhi Leonard rumors and the idea that Masai Ujiri could be lurking in the weeds and trying to make a big splash, and I would fully support that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the price would be. Like, it's difficult to put together the appropriate price in basketball because these deals are just, like, a superstar like that, if healthy, top five guy in the league, you have to pay so much for his services.
But there's two huge unknowns with Kawhi Leonard. One is, after the year that you will have him under contract, will he be interested in staying in your city and re-signing, which is a pretty big deal. And then the other one is, what kind of a player is Kawhi Leonard now that he's had this this season-ending injury that kept him out of the entire season with the Spurs on the knee? There's varying reports on, is he back? Can he run the way he used to? Can he cut the way he used to? Some say there's nothing to worry about. Others raise an eyebrow and say, why wouldn't you be worried? So, man, you've got to do a ton of due diligence with Kawhi Leonard's camp to figure out what's actually going on there. And they happen to be, not too helpfully, the most incommunicative camp in the NBA.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That they're notorious for just not communicating, and that's what's gone on here in San Antonio, where there's been a falling out with the... It's the gold standard organization, not only in the NBA, but in a lot of pro sports. Like, people in every sport look to the San Antonio Spurs as how do you run things? And suddenly their best player doesn't talk to them? I mean, that is incredibly murky stuff going on
and
there.
And wants out. And like watching Greg Popovich have to fly to him. Like, kind of like the Babcock-Matthews stuff. I mean, this is Greg Popovich.
But this is way worse. Because
of course it is.
Babcock-Matthews, you're talking about, hey, I don't want to play with Zach Hyman anymore.
I'm talking about the imagery. Right. Like, this is the great Mike Babcock, Team Canada head coach, 2 gold medals. You better get on a bird and fly down to his house and make sure that everything's all good.
Yes.
This is the great Greg Popovich, who everything runs through him. You better get on a bird and fly to San Diego and plead with this guy to come back. That, again, was symbolic of the power of players in the NBA.
Yes.
And even with Kawhi and all of the, how poisonous the situation felt last year, where the Spurs felt like he was cleared and he should be playing, and he just said, I'm not playing. And then sometimes he's in New York, sometimes he's in San Antonio, sometimes he's in L.A. And, like, players-only meetings, and then players going on the record, like Tony Parker, and basically ripping into him, you know, somewhat passive-aggressively. But remember that quote out of Parker where he's like, I had the same injury and I came back. So I don't know what to tell you.
He said, mine was 100 times worse.
Mine was worse.
And here I am.
And here I am.
And here I am.
And I'm an old man. Like, what's this guy doing? He's 26.
Totally, just absolutely undercut Kawhi Leonard in a way that you've just never seen.
No, you rarely
with the gold standard franchise of the league. Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
With all of that in consideration, he's so sought after.
Yeah.
And every team in the league would take him in a heartbeat. And the Spurs have so much leverage here. Even though he can't opt out after one more year and leave as a free agent, it's kind of like the Paul George scenario, only he's much more valuable, if healthy, than Paul George. And Paul George is a great player.
He's much more valuable in a lot of ways, except for those unknowns.
Right.
That could undercut the Spurs' case for getting the haul they hope to get.
But I don't think it will. I don't think it will. The NBA, I mean, I could be wrong on this, but just based on what the asking price appears to be, now you can ask for whatever. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. And there are some reports that, you know, Boston's not interested in. Obviously, Tatum's not going, but even Jaylen Brown, they don't want to give up, which I would be a bit surprised by, because I would make that move if Kawhi is willing to stay long-term in Boston. You're going to keep Jaylen Brown over Kawhi Leonard? I find that hard to believe. Same thing in Philly. Markelle Fultz is a guy they'd rather not give up. I would give him up in a heartbeat if Kawhi agreed to sign long-term. Why would you not? I know he just went first overall, but he's got the yips, and you don't even know what he is. And this is Kawhi Leonard, who's 26 years old. And that's where, again, when the Raptors come into it, it is always a game of poker when you're dealing with a scenario like this where a guy is available, but you got to pay a price, and other teams are lurking, but you don't know what they're willing to give up. You don't want to get fleeced. You don't want to give up that extra piece. But the Raptors in the East should be more desperate than every other team.
Oh, yeah.
Boston, they're playing with house money, man. They won a title in 09. They had the big three for a few years. Now they're loaded with young talent. Danny Ainge has done a remarkable job. Philly, yes, there was a lot of pain, but the process is coming to fruition here, and they're really, really loaded with young talent, and they're going to be good for a long time. The Raptors are the old team in the East who have been a perennial playoff team and really good, but can't get over the hump. So if there's one team in the East that should be the most desperate, it's clearly the Raptors to make this move.
Yeah, because their stars are right at the end of their shelf life. Kyle Lowry's probably tipped over into the jumping the shark territory where he's in decline, and you're just hoping if you have to keep him, and they'd trade him in a second if they could get Kawhi Leonard in town, there's no doubt about it. You're hoping that his decline doesn't really start to accelerate at a rate that, you know, can't be sort of compensated by the improvement of your young guys like OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam and Freddie Van Vliet. So, yeah, you get the sense, I'll tell you, you get the sense in the way Masai Ujiri was angry and emotional in the wake of that sweep, the second straight sweep by the Cleveland Cavaliers, that he is a desperate man in some ways. Like, not desperate in that he thinks he's going to lose his job tomorrow if they don't win a round in the playoffs or they can't get to the Eastern Conference Finals or an NBA Finals, but desperate in that he's just... He feels like this team has been so close and yet hasn't been able to get over that hump, and the hump was LeBron, of course. And now that LeBron has left the East, there's just this feeling of almost panic that we have to get it done right now.
Well, and as I think he should feel that panic, yeah. because now that roadblock, which was always an excuse and always a cop-out, is no longer there for you. So you can't be like, hey, what do you want, man? He's LeBron. You know, we're not alone. Everyone else lost to him, too. That's gone.
Yeah.
So you're coming off 59 wins. You fire the coach of the year. You hire a guy who's been an assistant here for 5 years. LeBron's out of the way. Of course the spotlight is on Masai.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Because I don't care how
he's
good a coach.
He's been here for 5 years.
He's been here a long time. And I don't care how good a coach Nick Nurse is. The idea that Nick Nurse is just going to suddenly flip a switch and get DeMar DeRozan to be accountable on defense like he says he's going to be able to get DeMar DeRozan to be accountable on defense. Come on. Like Dwayne Casey wasn't trying.
I know.
Like Dwayne Casey was just saying, DeMar, don't bother. Yeah, you don't. We'll give you possession after possession off on defense. It's not on you anymore. Like, that didn't happen here. They were trying to get the guy to play defense. But there's only so much energy you have in any given game. The guy was given everything on the offensive end. Defense has never been his thing. Should they have sat him down more like they did in the fourth quarter of game three when Dwayne Casey made a gutsy decision to say, my best player is not playing because he doesn't play defense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably should have done that more often. But the idea that suddenly this new guy who's been sitting next to Dwayne Casey is going to suddenly transform this team, it's not happening. The only way to transform the team is to transform the roster.
Right. The players are what they are.
Right.
Like, Kyle Lowry is who he is. DeMar is who he is. Serge Ibaka is who he is.
And he's getting worse.
Absolutely. And, you know, Nick Nurse, I guess, was on with Jim Rome today, and he's like trying to promote this idea that Kyle and DeMar have totally bought into a system. Like, come on, man. Let's get to training camp before we start spitting that out. Of course, they're going to tell you the right thing on July 10th or whatever it is.
What are they going to say?
What are they going to say? No, we're not buying into that system. I mean, of course they're going to say that. And I understand why he's trying to get out in front of it and trying to promote he's the right guy. And this is obviously what he has to do here. But no one's going to buy that in Toronto until we actually see it. And in reality, no one's going to care about it, the 82 games during the regular season.
Not at all.
Like, that's the position they found themselves in here. The regular season is completely irrelevant. You have to start succeeding in the
playoffs. It's going to mean nothing. It's going to be 6 months of absolutely meaningless pap. Because we're going to hear, oh, there's going to be a game where DeMar DeRozan plays some defense on a good player.
Yeah.
And there'll be headlines, DeMar buys it on defense finally. And bat packs for Nick Nurse for finally getting this guy, this liability on the defensive end to finally do something other than look like a pylon. And, yeah, but it won't mean anything. It won't mean anything until you get into the playoff tournament. And then, you know, you got to win a couple of rounds before it starts to mean anything because this team's been to the Eastern Final. They've been everywhere they need to go except the NBA Final. They've beaten everybody they wanted to beat except for LeBron. Now that LeBron's gone, the whole thing has changed and the expectations have changed. And that's why, man, you know Masai Ujiri's going to swing at this one. I'll give him credit for one thing. He's swung and missed a few times like DeMarre Carroll, you know, Serge Ibaka. But he will swing. He will swing here. Whether or not he makes contact, whether or not it's a whiff or a home run, we'll find out.
Jordan Schultz, Yahoo Sports NBA Insider, will join us on this in about 20 minutes. Travis Pastrana, legendary stuntman, 11-time X Games gold medalist, will join us in about 50 minutes. I'm looking forward to that. Lots of buzz around baseball about the All-Star game and how the voting should work out. We'll tell you about that next. All right, we'll get back into the Kawhi Leonard reports just after 6 p.m. Carmelo Anthony's now available as well, and he's being courted by a few different teams. I quite frankly don't think he's worth it, to be honest, but he's going to end up somewhere quality, more than likely Houston, but there's a couple of teams kicking tires on him. But yesterday it came out, the announcement, MLB All-Stars, Jay Happ is representing the Jays. He's having a good year. He's not having a great year. Wins and losses, he's been good. He's been their best pitcher, there's no question. But it's not like he's got a sub-2 ERA or anything like that. He's got a mid-4 ERA. But this is the way it works in baseball, where every team has to have a representative. And what really caused a big stir this year is there was a significant snub. Blake Snell of the Mariners didn't get voted in, and this guy's numbers are off the charts. Like, just crazy good numbers. And it got to a point where Chris Archer, starter down in Tampa, posted that thing on Twitter about how big of a joke it is and looking at his numbers. But I kind of think this is what needed to happen, and it serves the players right. Because forever, we always hear this in sports, the players are always like, these fans don't know anything, the media doesn't know anything, let us have a say in all this. So baseball finally allowed them to do that. And it's a weighted vote where the players have a certain percentage and the fans have a certain percentage. And it's pretty clear that the players just didn't put any thought into it and didn't care. And they're all coming out with excuses. Well, it's because we had to mail our vote. Why can't we do it on our iPad? Blah, blah, blah. It's bogus. The truth is the players care as much as the fans care. They don't. They really don't. Unless one guy who they're friends with or is a teammate gets snubbed, then all of a sudden they care. But they don't care about voting.
There's no doubt about it.
And this is just, it's proof. The fact that there are snubs like this and now a couple guys are making a big story out of it, it's your own fault.
No, I remember we tried to do a player poll one time, and it was like pulling teeth, trying to get players to give you intelligent, well-thought-out, well-researched answers about topics around the league. In the NHL, this was a hockey pool. Mm-hmm. But to me, like athletes in general, like they're interested in their own existence. They're interested in, you know, what's my playing time? What are my numbers? What's the coach thinking of me? What's my contract? And if you're going to ask them, who are the five best players in this league right now? They're not going to put any thought into it.
No, they don't.
They're going to reel off. They're probably going to tell you if they're five best friends that could be plausibly included in the list, right? And that's not bad or good. It's just who they are, mm-hmm. and what they're about.
No, they don't care enough. Yeah. I mean, and that's all-star games in this era have been so watered down, and what they used to represent, it's just not there anymore.
No.
And it's not the chicken or the egg. It's not because fans stop caring. It's because players stop caring. Players stopped looking at it as an honor. They look at it as a pain in the ass. Really, they'd rather the 3 days off in the Bahamas.
And it's like, and you see it every year because it's always like pulling teeth trying to get the best players to go into the NBA slam dunk contest. Well, the good guys don't do it. Mike Trout, home run derby's coming up. You interested in the home run derby?
No.
A great showcase that the fans happen to love. The kids definitely love. I know when I had kids that played baseball. I have a kid that played baseball, and I coached a baseball team. They all got excited about it. Mike Trout, why would I be interested in exciting the fans in a home run derby?
And it's the only thing going on, too, next week. There's nothing. Like, they have exclusivity over the summer in large parts, just in the North American sporting scene, in the American sporting scene. But the Midsummer Classic, it has a platform that no other All-Star game has. There's nothing else going on.
No. That's why they have the ESPYs, you know, in that day between, because it is the slowest day in sports where nobody's playing.
Like, nothing's going on.
None of the four major sports. The NFL hasn't heated up yet, even though, because you're still, you know, 6 weeks away. You're right. They've got this incredible platform, but you've nailed it, man. Like, if Mike Trout doesn't care enough, the greatest player in the game doesn't care enough to go on camera and hit a few home runs for the kids.
Show some personality. Get mic'd up.
Why would you get, like, and this is a year, too. Like, we just talked about it earlier in the segment or earlier in the show about how baseball's in trouble a little bit. Like, they're on pace for record strikeouts. The action, because it's become a game that's about home runs and walks and working counts, and it's not about stealing bases, not about making plays, it's about shifts, it's about analytics. Like, the game's not as appealing as it was. The pitchers are too dominant. The hitters are only trying to hit it out of the park. You know, it's not the game that a lot of us grew up watching. It's really morphed very quickly into something different. And there's look, baseball's going to be healthy. They're still making lots of money. But if this decline continued in the way it's been going, we talked about how there's almost 4 minutes on average between the average ball in play in baseball now, because there's so many strikeouts, because guys are swinging and missing, because they're trying to hit home runs and nothing else. I mean, there's some concerns there. And so, in other words, at a moment like the All-Star game, that's when you got to sell your stars. Like, you got the best player in the game, Mike Trout. He's been rendered irrelevant with a terrible Anaheim team, the most misused star player probably in all of sports right now.
Yep.
And so this is his moment. Like, you got to sell Mike Trout, and yet he won't do the home run derby.
No, not interested. And I'm sure, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he was like, I would rather not even be here, period.
Yeah.
You know, give me a chance to just chill out for a few days and go to Vegas. And, you know, that's the NHL is the worst for it. I mean, he's like, Crosby's barely been to any All-Star games. Now, sometimes it's because of the Olympics. Sometimes it's because of injuries and the concussions. But, like, that's Sidney Crosby, and he's like, no, I don't want to be there.
Wow.
You know, these guys want it. They don't want to be there.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, John Scott was in it, and Sidney Crosby wasn't in it.
Right.
Like, that made a lot of sense.
Says a lot about where the All-Star game is in 2018.
Says a lot about NHL marketing, too.
Well, valid. Jordan Schultz coming up. Yahoo NBA Insider. We'll get into the Kawhi Leonard to Toronto rumors and the idea of that potentially happening. And back into the Bobby Orr comments on Tavares and Matthews and Travis Pastrana. Legendary stuntman will join us at 6:30.